Now, I don't usually carry a computer up here when I give a presentation, but I figured I'll give it a try, even though I'm told it's not a good idea to do things for the first time when you have a big audience like this. But you'll see why, in fact, I actually plan a little multimedia 10 seconds for you. I'm actually going to be able to talk about what I plan to talk about because on the particular proposal, I was apparently very prescient on thinking what it might be. The first page of your handout, which actually was out of order, my secretary sent it somewhat randomly, is a cost of the proposal that that was just recommended, which is an estimate of what the cost would be to developers of having three versions of Windows to write for. Now, those are not the only costs. Those are just the cost of development. I'll be happy to talk about that in more detail. But you can take a look. And it's approximately $30 billion over a three-year period. And this is based on asking developers how much extra it costs them to produce different copies of Linux, of Unix, and other costs of porting programs from one operating system to another. But let me get on to the main point that I want to talk about, which is what is it that we should do about Microsoft, if anything? And to some extent, what both of us are doing is rehashing the case. Which is what I thought we might do. I was afraid I was going to have to back into it, but I can probably be a little more direct now. But I started this talk on the assumption that we were supposed to talk about what the remedies would be, which of course assumes some guilt. I do think that the lower court will find Microsoft guilty. But the way I thought I'd back into rehashing the case was to talk about using the aphorism, the punishment should fit the crime, and then talk about what the crime might have been. Now, one of the things we need to know is who are the injured parties. Okay, and the judge goes on and presents a well-written document for quite a few pages, 400 and something paragraphs. And in there, he gives a litany of various nasty activities that Microsoft engaged in, some of which were just mentioned. One of them was IBM. Microsoft was bullying IBM. It was nasty to IBM. And what Microsoft was basically doing was threatening to withhold Windows from IBM, we're told, unless IBM stopped promoting its competitor in the applications market, which was the Lotus Suite, which was a word processor and a spreadsheet and whatnot. And Microsoft has Microsoft Office, which most of you probably use, which also has a word processor and a spreadsheet and some other programs. And it went right down to the last minute, and IBM kept saying, we're not going to give you Windows. I'm sorry. Microsoft kept saying to IBM, we're not going to let you have Windows unless you guys behave better, presumably. IBM said, no, tough. And they got Windows. Maybe Microsoft shouldn't have been so nasty. Maybe it shouldn't have been so tough, but nothing really happened there. Another case, another example that was brought forward of Microsoft's behavior was with Apple. And there, Apple actually comes up twice in the finding of fact. And again, when you read it, it's hard to know exactly what Microsoft is threatening. But apparently, it was threatening to compete really hard against Apple if Apple kept developing QuickTime, which is an audio-visual program for both Windows and the Macintosh. And Microsoft said, gee, we'd really like it if you didn't create this program, because we have our own version. And we're going to work really hard on our version. We're going to be really tough if you don't stop creating yours. And Apple said, no. We're going to keep working on QuickTime. Microsoft now is presumably working on its own. And these are supposedly indications of the nasty behavior that Microsoft engaged in, because the judge went on for some length talking about these. I'm not sure these really are such terrible behaviors. Now, there are other behaviors in there that we can talk about. But this is a case where Microsoft appears to be bargaining in a way that was not as pleasant as it might be. All right, but normally when people bargain, which may not be the subject necessarily of antitrust, we don't have emails talking about it. That's sort of the one novelty in this case that's been the biggest problem for Microsoft, are their emails. But if you're bargaining, you can always say lots of things like, I'm going to go to someone else. I'm going to stop dealing with you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to shoot myself. I'm going to hold my breath until I turn blue and die. I mean, kids do that all the time. But the bottom line is what you wind up doing, and in those cases, Microsoft didn't do anything. Now, the other set of potential harms, and there are several of them, is the one that should be the most important, I think, is the harm to consumers. And the judge has a very hard time coming up with any concrete harm to consumers. He has five paragraphs he devotes to that. The harms are almost laughable. He talks about how this wasted hard drive space, because if you don't want to use Internet Explorer, it's still sitting on your hard drive, and that's taking up all the space, and that's a waste. That's true, but that's not much of a harm, because I don't think there's a single program that you have on your hard drive that's not wasting some space, because you're not using every part of that program. Then there's the cost of removing Internet Explorer for the people who want to remove it. It takes time and effort to do that. Well, that's a cost. Well, it's true, but it's not really a very big cost. It's not the end of the world. I don't think it's something that you break a company apart over. And then there's the confusion that people might have when Internet Explorer is called by some other program and you don't know what's happening on the screen. Well, for people who are really confused by that and are really upset, they're probably confused by a lot of things that are happening on their computer. And that's a cost, but I don't think that's the type of cost that antitrust should be dealing with either. Now, the reason the judge has so much trouble finding harm to consumers is because there's virtually no harm to be found. That the evidence, if you look at the broader picture, which is beyond the scope, perhaps, of the case itself, is that Microsoft's had a terrific impact on consumers. If you look at page 3 of the handout, and I guess I should look at it. My notes say it's page 3, and sure enough, it is page 3. Yes, somewhat out of order. You can take a look at prices in some real markets over a period of time. This is not hypothetical. This is not theoretical. These are actual prices. And it's really one chart that I've just split in two. And it's a chart of word processor and spreadsheet prices. And I've broken it at 1991-92 so that you can see what was going on in the first half and what you can see what's going on in the second half. The first half, Microsoft is not the dominant player in word processors and spreadsheets. Most of you probably know WordPerfect was the dominant word processor. Lotus 1-2-3 was the dominant spreadsheet. And if you take a look at the left-hand side of the chart, the prices are two things. They're high, and they're not going down. They're just sort of sitting around. The second half is when Microsoft became the dominant player in that market. And you see a very, very steep and very, very large decline in software prices. Now, I think actually we should give Microsoft some credit for that. They're probably responsible for that. Now, there has been a claim made based on this evidence that, well, maybe there was just some uniform decrease in prices going on in software that just happened to occur at the same time that Microsoft was becoming dominant in the application. So if you go to the next page, on page 4, you can take a look at the average prices of every application to consumers that DataQuest follows. Over a period of time where they had contiguous definitions, which ended in 1995, they changed the definition of application markets that year, and we broke the applications into two categories, those that competed with Microsoft and those that didn't. The diamond line on the top are the applications that don't compete with Microsoft. And yes, there was a small price decline over this period of time, something on the order of 12%. If you take a look at the markets where Microsoft competes, and this will be true whether it's weighted by how large the market is or whether it's unweighted, so it's not dominated by word processors and spreadsheets, the average fall is approximately 60% in price. Okay, so that there's no general overall decline in prices that you could say is responsible in the markets where Microsoft competes, that the Microsoft markets are different. Now, it could be that there's some other factor going on, but no one has suggested any. And what I suggest is that Microsoft is, in fact, more competitive. It's like the Walmart of software, and that's why prices have come down. That's also why it's facing the antitrust case, because there are some people who are threatened by Walmart. Just as you know, Walmart's being prosecuted in certain states where they're trying to pass legislation that says you can't have a grocery store that's more than a certain square footage because the grocery stores in those states don't want to have to compete with Walmart because Walmart's going to have lower prices. I'm actually going to skip out of order here, but the actual history of this case goes back beyond before this case started officially. I started talking about it in 1995 based on research that I had done, by the way, with my co-author. All of this is with my co-author, Steve Margolis, who's sitting here somewhere. And the reason we got into it was not because we'd done any work on Microsoft, and not because we'd been doing anything on antitrust per se, but we'd been doing work on something called network effects, and in particular something called lock-in, or what we might call these days the application's barrier to entry. And there was a theory that we had been criticizing for a long time as being very unrealistic. And Okay, my computer's just shut off. So, one of the problems was that this theory had no empirical support, just like the claims that are made about software prices have virtually no empirical support. We were asked to look because at that time there was a fellow named Gary Reback, who was a lawyer representing certain anonymous software firms that were so afraid of Microsoft they were afraid to be mentioned. And he was using these theories to attack Microsoft. And at that time, it looked like AOL was going to be the story, that Microsoft was including the Microsoft network with the operating system, just as it later included Internet Explorer. And they were thinking they might be able to bring a case with the Microsoft network. Microsoft network never went anywhere and never got any big market share. AOL did great, so that potential case fizzled out. But then they brought the same theory to this case with Internet Explorer and Netscape. Netscape did get beaten. Internet Explorer is a better browser now, and it certainly has a bigger market share. And so now they have a case, and that's the case they brought. But the case was really brought at the behest of Sun and Oracle. And why are they so interested in this case? And the answer is that they're afraid of Windows NT. They really don't care very much about Windows 98. That's not their market. But Windows NT goes right into where their bread and butter is. And if they could get the government to bring a case that would punish Microsoft in its major market, that might slow Microsoft down in its progress in competing with Sun and Oracle in the high-end workstation market where Microsoft's been going all along and made it very clear that's where NT was going to go. That's what this case is really about. Okay, but the fact is that that's all I'm going to say about that, but that's sort of a little bit of the politics, and that we were involved in those theories in 1995. Now, the harm that's been mentioned, I've mentioned two, which I'm not very enthusiastic about, this harm to Netscape, and undoubtedly Netscape has been harmed. Its market share is lower than it was. But it's been harmed because Microsoft produced a better product at a lower price. Even the judge admits that if that's all it was, that there's no harm to consumers. And it's not clear there's anything terribly wrong unless he wants to say there's predation, which it's not clear he wants to say. So then, what harm can there be? And what the judge says is, well, there's a harm to competition. And that's because Netscape wasn't just a browser, but Netscape is really a potential operating system. That it's the Trojan horse for Java. And what Java is, this language that's going to essentially turn into an operating system, and people are going to write programs for Java, and then Microsoft will have a competitor, so Microsoft needs to kill Netscape so that therefore Java is hurt. Java, by the way, is Sun's program. Okay, so the same participants keep coming back into this. The problem with that is that it is based on this idea of the application barrier to entry, which is this lock-in idea. It's an interesting theory. It could be true. There's just no evidence that it's ever been true, that there's ever been a case of lock-in. All right, this is a theory with no support whatsoever. It's a theory that has been tested, where evidence has been put forward and then found to be incorrect. Okay, this is a theory that's been spun out of thin air. The logic is somewhat sensical, but you know, that's what the book is about. The book is about lock-in and how it doesn't occur and how markets work and the better products actually win, even when we thought they might not have in the past. We spend a particular chapter or two talking about software markets. And what we find there is that even though the theory predicts that we might get stuck with a single firm and it would be very hard to dislodge an entrenched incumbent because of these network effects, but in fact the opposite seems to happen. That yes, the incumbents have very big market shares. That is a function of the network effects. But they get overturned very quickly, much more rapidly than happens in normal industries, and quite frequently. And they get overturned, the key turns out to be whenever somebody comes along with a better product. But when you come along with an inferior product and you don't overturn the incumbent, is that any big surprise? Okay, and that's what we're talking about in some of these cases. Okay, now what I think is going on is that there's something that's my dissertation advice that Harold Demsetz used to call the Nirvana fallacy, which was at that time that the government could do things better than the market could, so if there was some market failure, we should have the government take over. There's here what I think is a different type of Nirvana fallacy, which is that, yes, the government's being used, but there's some sort of ideal competition that's going to occur in this market if, in fact, we could just jumpstart it and get Microsoft out of the picture. Now, this is where, and I don't know how much time I have left, I was going to bring my little audio visual in. Anybody can take flights of fancy, And the particular one I wanted to take was that movie with that Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life, with Jimmy Stewart. Imagine, it's hard to imagine really Bill Gates being the Jimmy Stewart character here. But imagine that we had a world without Microsoft. Where is it? After all this talk, I can't find my little icon. It must be a problem with Windows. It must be something we're suing. At any rate, I'm afraid I may not have it, but I had a little clip where Jimmy Stewart says, you know, the world would have been better off without me. And so what I wanted to, and then they go to Potterville, if you remember. And Pottersville was the evil banker who is now controlling everything because Jimmy Stewart hadn't been there to help. The version of that I wanted to give you was, well, let's say Microsoft hadn't existed. What would a real market for operating systems tend to look like? Not some fantasy we have of lots of great competition going on, because that's not the way these markets tend to operate. Well, there's one little story that I should tell you, which is about IBM, which I'm not going to say we should do anything about. But IBM has something called OS2. The judge talks about OS2. And talks about how it should have been able to do better against Windows, but that nasty Microsoft just kept it down with its nasty behavior. What the judge doesn't tell us is anything about the history of OS 2. When it initially came out, there were going to be two versions of OS 2. And this might have been the real alternative to Windows. One version that would run only on IBM PCs. You may remember something called the micro channel. A special architecture that IBM had that no one else had because they had patented it and it was idiosyncratic to them. And it wasn't clear there was any improvement in that technology, but they had this operating system sitting in the wings that was only going to run on machines that had that architecture. And nobody else could have it because it was patented. They had another version of OS 2 that was going to run on everyone else's computer. The version that was going to run on the IBM machines was a better version of OS 2. It was going to have built-in networking and a few other communications abilities. And then there was the OS 2 Lite, which the other producers were going to have. Now, why was IBM doing that? Well, they were doing that because they wanted control again of the business PCs. They wanted if you had a PC that was going to be networked, you were going to have to buy their version of OS 2, and therefore their machine, because that was the only one it was going to run on. Now, that never came to pass. And it didn't come to pass because, sort of like the Jimmy Stewart character, Bill Gates was there with his cheap version of Windows, and they kept Potter from his evil ways. And so we don't have only one business computer running. We have Dell and Gateway and lots of others out there besides IBM's. But this is the way the industry really works, because that's what would have happened if IBM weren't there. We can talk about what the world would have been like if Apple had been in control, where we'd only have one brand of hardware to choose from. We'd have high prices, because Apple was very famous for high prices. We might still have black and white computers, for all we know. Not that I have anything against Apple, per se, but the world, that's where the way, those are the alternatives out there, not some world where we have hundreds and hundreds of operating systems and everyone is dancing around with flowers all over the place. That's not the way these markets work. Now, there are some remedies. I can come up with some novel remedies as well. This is the old version then, somehow. One thing would be that I would say that Microsoft executives should not be allowed to write email unless they take a course in both antitrust and charm school. I also think, and this is a little bit more serious, but still fairly facetious, that the price of Windows should be automatically set to the difference between a Sun workstation, a low-end workstation, and an equivalent-powered Intel machine without an operating system. All right, and then after you saw the high price you would have to pay for that, you would be thrilled to get Windows back at the old price. By the way, we're talking about $40, $45 is the price of Windows. We're not talking about an enormous amount of money. One of the authors in the book that is out here, because that's a book from a conference, is named Ben Klein. He was also on my dissertation committee. He didn't know anything about computers before you guys spoke to him about coming to the conference. And he says, well, what are they talking about anyway? And I said, oh, you know, Windows. And he says, well, how much is that? I said, well, it costs the OEMs about $45. He started laughing hysterically. Is that $45? That's what they're upset about? That's a monopoly price? I would say Microsoft would have to make its operating system to at least as many OEMs as Apple and Sun, a weighted average of those two, which of course is zero, and that they have to give the same discretion over screen icons to their OEMs that Sun and Apple need to give to theirs, which of course is none, because there are no OEMs. The alternatives to the current system are not likely to be a world that's a whole lot more competitive, probably a world that's less competitive and with higher prices. And as I said before, the real reason that this occurs is because it's, I believe, the politics of this case is that it's due to another market entirely. And the Justice Department got pulled into something which I'm sure they're very happy about now, because it'll be great for the careers of all the lawyers involved. And certainly I'm very impressed with David Boies. He's a fabulous lawyer. I would hire that guy in a second. But it's a bad case for consumers. And that's what everyone's forgetting. That's the biggest weakness in the judge's finding of fact. There's no harm that they're going to be able to find. It's a good thing for the states that they weren't able to get their case going, because their case was going to bring in applications. And if you bring in applications, you have that chart that I showed you, and that chart shows prices did not go up, they went down. Even though Microsoft is not always the lowest one, but it's whose watch are we under? The book has detailed a lot more cases than that, lots of details as to what's going on. If you really want to know what's going on in those markets, I suggest you read the book. The last page of the handout is just for those of you who like to reminisce about the good old days. And it's from a 1986 copy, I think, of Creative Computing. So you can see what software prices were like when it was $300 for a word processor or $300 for a spreadsheet, as opposed to buying an entire office suite for $200-something, $300. Things were a lot more expensive in those days. The remedies that have been proposed, this three integrated baby bills, whether you just do it with the operating system or whether you say that the baby bill is all produced, the entire set of software, whether it's applications and operating systems and whatnot, would be very expensive. It'd be very tough on consumers, because now you have to decide, do you want to buy Windows A, Windows B, or Windows C? They have to become incompatible with each other if they're really going to be separate products. So there's confusion on the part of consumers. Developers have to decide if they're going to develop for A, B, or C. If they decide to develop for all three, that's where the costs come from in that first page of the table of the charts I gave you. They're very high costs for no benefits that we can really measure, except that we're not in the ideal world of competition. That's really the cost that that the judge has pointed to. If we had three specialized baby bills where we had, which is not one that was suggested just now, where you have one application, one operating system, and one internet, which has been suggested by others, then you have three monopolists instead of one, and it's not clear how that benefits anybody. And the reason that Sun and Oracle have been the most vociferous in their speaking, they want to break it up three ways, the way I first said, because that's the most costly. What they really want to do is drive a dagger through Microsoft's heart. They want to impose costs that are as high as possible on Microsoft. And the way you do that is to break it up vertically and then say, well, person A goes here, person B goes here, person C goes there. It'll take a very hard time for Microsoft to recover from that. It will take a very long time to set that up. And while all that's going on, they continue to clean up in the high-end server market and the workstation market. And that's what they really want. There's been some claims that we should auction Windows. That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Then we're just going to have two versions. Who's going to pay for it? The minute it's auctioned off, what happens to it? I don't know that that does anything. And I think, yeah, then there's some behavioral remedies, one of which I actually think is a good idea. And I think Microsoft should voluntarily agree to it. And that's to publish a price list for Windows and stick to it, not give any deviations. Only because it's such a headache. It sounds like they do all this crazy stuff. And it sounds like they're already engaging in price discrimination if it's true, and I don't know why that charge wasn't brought up against them by these companies that they're supposedly discriminating against. But if they published a price list, if they were forced to do that and charge people what it said, I think that would be a good idea. That would fix what I see as the only behavior here that has some evidence behind it and which may be illegal. And so I'm all in favor of that. But the idea of not being allowed to add items to the operating system, I think, is a terrible idea. It's hard to enforce, it's hard to know how to monitor, and the operating system should have things added to it. They do have things added to it, they almost always, whether we're talking about Apple or the Windows, whenever they add something new, it's almost always competing with somebody who was producing something individually before. And it's almost unavoidable, because there's a market opening, someone sees that people want it, they start producing it, then it's something that goes in the operating system, and then those people may be out of business. But that's something that's the way the world works, and it's useful to have it. Let me give you an example, voice recognition. Not out of time yet? I am, okay. Voice recognition is something that all programs ought to be able to have access to, so that the creators of the programs don't have to write the voice recognition themselves. They just call the voice recognition module that's in there. It's clearly easiest to do that if everyone knows what the module is, and if it's in the operating system. So that's something that should be in the operating system. I think most people would probably agree when it gets good. But there are companies out there selling voice recognition products right now. So if Microsoft then tries to put it in, we enter this realm again of, gee, they're going to be putting these guys out of business. And I bet you those voice recognition guys have some APIs that they have there that people would be able to write to use their products. And so it's this Netscape thing all over again. Those were not APIs that anybody was going to be able to write an entire program to run on. You weren't going to be able to run, and the judge even admits it, the APIs for Java don't allow you to write serious applications. The reason nobody writes applications on Netscape and Java in any significant numbers because nobody wants those applications. There are 50% of the people almost who have Netscape on the IBM right now, and then there's a whole bunch of them on the Macintosh, and then there's a whole bunch of them in the Unix world. Surely that's a big enough market that if somebody wanted to use one of those programs written for Netscape's APIs, the writer of those programs would have a plenty big audience, plenty bigger than the Macintosh market, which has 12,000 programs, which the judge tells us is insufficiently small to make it a viable competitor. Now, I always thought that if I didn't want to buy a Windows machine, I could just go buy a Macintosh, and it wasn't such a terribly hard thing to do. But apparently that's not true. Macintosh is not part of the market definition. In fact, according to the judge, Macintosh has a monopoly. But it's by itself, it has 100% of the market, and it's therefore should be liable to the same set of rules in antitrust as Microsoft because they don't compete with each other. Microsoft only competes with itself. Apple only competes with itself. Sun only competes with itself, maybe the other Unix boxes. We'll have lots of monopolies out there according to this ruling. At any rate, I think that pretty much finishes up where I am. And as you can tell, I think we should just tell Bill Gates to be a little bit sweeter and tell his guys to be a little bit nicer and slap around a bit, and then we'll actually all be better off. Thank you.